On RN, I'm Lynn Malcolm with All in the Mind.
Wise men say only fools rush in.
Even if you're not an Elvis Presley tragic, you must admit this classic song tugs fairly insistently on the old heartstrings, and we hear why shortly. Today, the healing power of music in our hearts and in our minds.
Music, in some ways, has only been recently investigated using modern technologies. And when they began doing those kinds of experiments, really in the post-Second World War period, and particularly around the 1960s, when the discipline of music psychology really started to find its feet, those initial efforts worked largely in a cognitive model and so had very narrow experimental goals.
Professor Jane Davidson is Deputy Director of the ARC Centre of Excellence for the History of Emotions.
Nowadays, as we're developing much more information about the human brain, for instance, through different kinds of scanning techniques and so on, and we're also really valuing the importance of social psychological frameworks for understanding, we're beginning to look at much more holistic and integrated ways of understanding human behaviour. And as that understanding is developing, we are beginning to ask much bigger questions like, why is music such an important part of human identity? I think what's important to note is that ever since people have written records, we've had lots of theoretical ideas about this incredibly strong connection between music and emotion and its special role in our lives. So understanding that as fully as possible so that we can get therapeutic benefit, intellectual benefit, and social benefit. And so for me, generally, that research needs to forge ahead.
As a music therapist at Royal Talbot Rehabilitation Hospital in Melbourne, Jeanette Tamplin is often moved by what music can do for the people she sees.
Some of the particularly standout moments for me as a music therapist have been working with people who might be coming out of a coma and not verbal at all, just starting to come awake again, and the team are really trying to work on getting them to respond to communication over a period of weeks, and then having that moment in therapy when you're singing and they'll suddenly come out with a word, or you know, you see them come alive, their eyes will open up, and that power of music to tap into some area of the brain that has connections with memory, has connections with emotion, has so many connections. Yeah, it's really amazing to see those kind of moments happen in a therapy session.
Later, we'll meet Mark and Annie, who've had some real breakthroughs as a result of their music therapy sessions with Jeanette Tamplin.
Shall I stay?
Why is it that some songs like this one have such a powerful emotional effect on us? Jane Davidson.
Firstly, the really interesting point about that song is that it was actually written in the 18th century, and it's a song called Plaisir d'amour. So it's got a long history to it. And it has a lovely, lilting, slow-paced melody. It's very catchy. It's repetitive. It hooks us in. And then it's got a slightly quicker section combining together with a kind of harmonic language. So it has all these features together. It's not giving us some kind of hardwired brainstem reflex because it's not a loud crashing bang or whatever. But it has, for many, many people, a very strong episodic memory link. And it puts us in this nice calming mood, open to relaxation and listening and letting our heartstrings be tugged, if you like.
Jane Davidson from the Centre of Excellence for the History of Emotions. From her investigations into the emotional power of music, she believes that having music as a strong presence throughout our lives is invaluable.
for me, one of the most significant arguments for having music persisting across the lifespan is as soon as an infant is born, it utters these sounds, this goo-goo gahing, which is exploring their sound world, but it's also asking for a response. And part of the nurturance of the mother-infant interaction is that interdependency that comes through all those things associated with comfort and warmth. And some of that is to do with physical holding and, of course, feeding. But a lot of it also is to do with this emotional holding that is in sound rather than a kind of physical holding. So if that is the foundation of how we come into the world and how we experience love and warmth and nurturance, clearly it's very important that as we develop, we keep that aspect of our humanness going. And what we're finding now is that children who learn musical instruments or who engage with music very early in life have what you might call some kind of intellectual transfer, that it generally enhances their intelligence and it, in generally speaking, has a positive impact on them. Now, you could say that that could occur with sports. If you do more sports, you're going to be generally fitter. So I'm not making any earth-shattering claims that music's going to make you much brighter or, you know, all that hype. But there is evidence that music enhances your cognitive capacities. And that's in part because you're intensifying your educational experience. Unfortunately, in our society, engaging in music isn't something we do very commonly. We might sing at a football match, we might sing happy birthday, but there's no sense in which we just want to sing with our friends. That somehow isn't in the cultural rule of engagement with others. Whereas in many, many other societies in the world, music is a crucial part of social life and understanding of one another. And in some societies, you can't even say some things unless you express them through music. And for me, that sharing, that sense of understanding your role in a group, how to collaborate with people, how to feel emotional closeness, is something that music is really powerful at doing. And of course, my underlying message would be, let us all engage with music much more. It's wonderful that we listen, and many of us are really avid and indeed expert listeners, but it would be just much better if we were all making music as well.
Even if you haven't yet managed to participate in creating music yourself, just listening to a particular song at a particular time can really shift your perspective and have quite a therapeutic effect on your mood.
If we're feeling a little bit low because of this capacity music has to lift your spirits, in the sense that we entrain to its rhythm, we listen to its melody, and if its tonality is major and it's quite energized and positive, these have direct impacts on us, both mentally and physically. And so we do self-medicate with music. Many of us do that in our everyday lives. When we go to the gym, we might want to, you know, run faster, so we put that music on and it sort of boosts your spirits and helps you get through your program of exercise. Or indeed, we sometimes do the opposite. We might feel a little bit down, and we might want to wallow in that feeling for a while, and we'll play music of that sort of more melancholic nature. And what music therapists have developed is a really brilliant way, a systematic and controlled use of music for therapeutic outcome. That can vary. So, for instance, if somebody has had a stroke and they've got impaired capacity in a hand and they want to re-establish the neural pathway, and of course we can, through exercise and so on, regain some of those pathways to enable motion to return, Something like drumming is a brilliant way of doing that because it's rhythmical, it gives the client a fixed target, and something, because we have this capacity to entrain rhythmically, something to work towards in a collaborative activity with a therapist. Likewise, if we have a brain injury, we know that speech and language are dealt with well in different parts of the brain, but we also know that when there is some damage to one part of the brain is an incredibly plastic organ. And so that means that sometimes pathways can be rerouted, we can reestablish, or new pathways can be generated. So what happens often with something like stroke is they use a technique called melodic intonation therapy, where they begin to try to get someone back into speech by singing, because that information is stored and used in a different part of the brain. And eventually you get a crossover and some transference back to the capacity to speak. And some of the results have been incredibly compelling and very moving, of course, when you hear somebody struggling to make a sound, coming all the way through to being able to sing back information, and then eventually regain the capacity to speak. So in that way, you see, music is a very powerful tool for us.
Come a little bit closer, hear what I have to say.
On RN, I'm Lynn Malcolm with you on All in the Mind. Today, exploring the power of music in our hearts and in our minds. And this is Mark singing along with music therapist Jeanette Tamplin at the Royal Talbot Rehabilitation Hospital in Melbourne. More about him shortly. Jeanette Tamplin is a talented singer and musician and has also trained in the specialised field called Neurologic Music Therapy in the United States. It focuses on the scientific application of music and how it affects our brains and physiology.
So I guess the idea with that type of training is to look at non-musical behaviour and then to look at the rehabilitation needs of the patients and then apply some kind of musical activity that's going to improve the patient function in a particular area. It might be physical, it might be speech, it might be cognitive difficulties. So that's kind of the theoretical foundation of the kind of work that we do in rehabilitation here. In terms of research, the biggest body of research would be in physical function, so walking rehabilitation. And there's a large body of evidence to show that external rhythm has a really strong organising feature for the way that we move. Everything that we do is based on rhythm, and people who have had a stroke or a head injury and one side of their body is more affected than another, and they have what's called a hemiplegic gait, where they walk unevenly. If you play music with a strong rhythmic stimulus, most of the time you will see an immediate change in the way that people walk because of that organising feature. So we use that principle that exists to work in rehabilitation and help people to make their gait more even, make their steps longer, make their walking faster, and that's a technique called rhythmic auditory stimulation, and that's a really well-researched technique.
And what do you know about the area of the brain that you're dealing with?
Well, the cerebellum's quite strongly involved in coordination of movement, but I think in terms of rhythmic processing, it's really a whole brain activity, which is another reason why music therapy is particularly effective in neurological rehabilitation, because even if you've got damage in some areas of the brain, because rhythm is processed so diffusely across the brain, it's still an avenue for accessing rehabilitation pathways, I guess.
The Royal Talbot Rehabilitation Centre in Melbourne provides intensive rehab to people with a wide range of disabilities, including acquired brain injury. They're using music therapy in some of their rehab programs and are studying its effectiveness at the same time. Jeanette Tamplin.
At the moment we're doing two research projects. One of them is looking at the effect of singing, so looking at the effect particularly of the rhythm in singing on people with motor speech disorders. So this is people who have a language disorder, which is specifically related to an area in the left hemisphere where they can no longer access language and find it hard to get words out, often can still access words through singing. And there's a technique called melodic intonation therapy where we use music and the rhythmic stimulation, tapping with the left hand to engage the right hemisphere and using the right hemisphere and the whole brain neural connections for singing to help people re-access speech again. And then the next sort of step in that process when they are articulating words in songs is to gradually remove the melody, focus on the rhythm, and then return someone to normal speech and try and basically give them another way to access language through singing.
And you're seeing results in that people are actually starting out not being able to speak and then moving through to being able to to speak.
Definitely. And you'll see that with Mark, the patient that we're going to go over and see on the ABI ward soon. He is an example of that. Someone who I worked with initially, I was doing sessions with the speech therapist and he found it really stressful if someone tried to come near his face. And so I would play relaxing music and she would try and massage around his head and neck and to reduce some of the tension to even begin to start thinking about talking or eating. And he was nonverbal at that time. So I've been working with him for 2 months and he's come such a long way. In the first or second session, he was already able to come out with a word. So we were singing Knocking on Heaven's Door and he was able to sing Knock, Knock, Knocking on Heaven's Door. He came out with the last word. And then over time, we've just gradually built on that. And so now he can sing whole songs. His language outside of singing has also improved. Still confused. He's got a lot of cognitive issues and language issues that are ongoing, but he's continually making progress and he's an example of someone like that, I guess. Do you want to help me choose a song?
Yeah.
Shall we do Pink Floyd or the Beatles?
Pink Floyd?
Pink Floyd.
Mark is around 40 and had a very severe type of stroke called a subarachnoid hemorrhage. He's very lucky because 80% of people with that level of injury don't survive. He's in a wheelchair and the damage has also caused problems with his language, his cognition and his memory. He's been at the Royal Talbot Rehabilitation Centre for around 3 months. The technique Jeanette Tamplin has been using with Mark is called musical speech stimulation.
Can I get you to try and sing all the words with me?
I can give it a try.
Great, that's what I'd like to hear. So I'm using the automatic and well-known qualities of music that he's familiar with to stimulate automatic speech or automatic singing for him, really, to try and find another way in for him to access language and be able to communicate.
So
tell you think you can tell heaven from hell, blue skies from pale. Can you tell a green field?
I'm Louisa, I'm Mark's partner of nearly 17 years.
17 years?
Mm.
Fuck, that's a long time.
That's right, yeah.
And
you still love me?
Yep.
You didn't rush into that.
Yes, I still love you, Blossom. Of course I do. That's why I'm sitting here.
Thanks.
My pleasure.
I struggle to believe you.
Enough of this cheek. Yes. What were your other questions?
So, Louisa, you've been coming to see Mark for quite some time now while he's been having this music therapy.
Yep, yep. I just love seeing him enjoy this. A lot of his work in terms of rehab is not fun, it's hard work. So I love seeing him enjoy himself. Yeah.
And he has quite a musical background. He grew up with a musical family.
That's right. His brother and father both come in here to visit and play and sing with him as well. So he does. He comes from a very musical background. Mark's also the co-founder of one of Victoria's big regional music festivals. So,
tell me about the sort of improvement that you've seen since he's been doing the musical therapy.
I can sing.
You can sing, yes. I haven't said anything about what key you're singing in, but that's all right. He really enjoys this, as I said, and one of the things that's been very difficult for him to overcome since his injury is his anxiety.
Memory.
Your memory as well, my angel, yes. But just as his partner, I can see that there's actual genuine pleasure. That's not anxiety at all. It's quite the opposite. So it's a huge improvement.
I can remember song lyrics.
You can.
You can, yeah.
To some extent.
Yeah. When you hear those songs, does it bring back other memories from the past?
No.
You just remember the songs.
I try to remember them.
I think because these songs, primarily it's songs from Mark's childhood, it'd be hard for him to pin down a memory, if that makes sense, of things like Pink Floyd and so on, because he's heard them all his life. But some other things that you guys sing together from more specific times, your wild youth. Mm.
And have you noticed that his speech has improved since his memory for the words to the songs have improved?
Yeah, his vocabulary has really expanded, which is very special. Before we came here to the Talbot, Mark wasn't speaking at all.
I think your first word might have been in Knocking on Heaven's Door.
Yeah, what word?
Door.
Door.
Because I sang knock, knock, knocking on heaven's
door.
And you sang door. That was it. That was the start of a beautiful musical relationship that we've continued to develop.
Okay. Sing some more.
Mark, with music therapist Jeanette Tamplin and his partner Louisa. And tell me about Annie, the other person we're about to see.
Yeah, Annie is a young girl in the spinal injury unit. She has, I think, T12 incomplete paraplegia. She also has a brain injury and some ongoing memory issues as a result of that. But she's actually a participant in the other research study, which is looking at the effect of songwriting for people who've had a traumatic injury, particularly focusing on self-concept and identity and adjusting to change.
My name's Annie Zierby. Apparently I had a car accident and completely wrote off my car. But the neuropsych team at the Royal Melbourne seemed to think that it was an aneurysm that caused it.
Did you have any symptoms leading up to that, as far as you know?
Not that I know of, but I don't think it shows anything until it explodes in your brain.
And what was the first that you knew that it happened?
When I woke up in Austin, which was about a month later, I just became aware. Yeah, I don't even know when it was, because my memory's all foggy back then.
So how much do you remember about before the accident?
I've lost heaps of memory. I think I've lost nearly a year.
And so how did you feel when they suggested that you start some music after your accident?
A bit funny. I just didn't think I'd be able to do it anymore.
Annie decided to give songwriting a try. It's part of some research into the therapeutic applications of songwriting being conducted by Associate Professor Felicity Baker from the University of Melbourne. Jeanette Tamplin explains their songwriting project.
Over the 6 weeks, they have 12 sessions, and we write three songs over that time. One's looking specifically at the past and their image of who they were as a person, physically, socially, emotionally, family, academically. And then we write a song about that, and then we write a song about now, being in hospital, processing, adjusting to change, being a patient, having an injury, and then we write a final song looking towards the future and how they integrate their past with their present and then look towards the future. So it's really about an adjustment process, using songwriting to help facilitate that.
And why is actual songwriting effective rather than just listening to music or playing music?
That's a good question, and I guess this is really just a feasibility study. We're just looking to see what the outcomes are. We know from our clinical experience that it's very effective. I guess music in general, music is helpful to help people connect with their emotions, particularly for, we have quite a large proportion of our patients are young and male, specifically in the spinal injury unit. That's just the typical cohort of people with spinal injury. And that group of patients are also the ones who find it more difficult to express themselves emotionally and get in touch with or be able to talk about how they're feeling. But they're also usually into their music, and that can often be a good way of connecting with someone.
Can you remember if I pluck it or strum it? Keep plucking at the start and then strumming. That's right.
So Annie's written a song. We've finished a song and recorded a song about looking back into her past, and then we're kind of halfway through a new one, but we know where she's at now. So do you want to say anything about what the process has been like for you, like reflecting back and thinking and making that into a song?
Yeah, it's interesting looking back at what I had. Yeah, I don't really like what I was like before the accident. Now that I'm looking back, I loved it at the time, but I think I'm a better person now.
Why do you think that?
Not really sure.
Do you think going through that trauma has actually changed you into a person that you like better?
Yeah, it's brought me closer with my family too. Yeah.
Looking back, I didn't know what I had. I didn't appreciate my freedom. My family.
So can you describe a little bit about how it's come out in the songs that you've written in each of the three phases?
Well, we just kind of talked about what I was like and then put that into words, into lyrics.
And then how did the music side of it come in to go with the lyrics? How did you do that?
We kind of talked about what style of song and whether it was going to be, you know, happy or sad or mellow or upbeat, and kind of got a general idea, and then I just sort of gave some ideas like, what do you think about this? And I'd pick something or I'd strum something and tried a few different chords. You know, we'd have a line and then I'd sing it one way and then sing it another way and say, do you like it if it goes up or it goes down? I mean, Annie's quite musical herself. She plays piano, so she kind of has quite clear ideas about how she wants it to sound. So I just sort of get her started, really, and then she goes, no, I don't like that, or do it like that, or do it the way you did it the first time better, and that's kind of how it evolves, really.
Do you think it's helped you?
Yeah, it has.
In what way?
Well, I'm having a bit of trouble with my memory and concentration, and it's definitely helped with both of those. And, yeah, so it's just kind of reminded me about things that I used to do, and, yeah.
Did you enjoy the process?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was lovely. Amazing.
A big part of my life, learning.
Yeah, I plan on walking again. Yeah.
Have you been able to get up off the bed at all yet?
Yeah, they put me up onto a standing frame the other day, which is exciting.
And you were really excited when I spoke to you last week because you said something had happened with your left foot. Do you remember that?
Yeah. I can kind of flex my left leg.
Oh, I can just see that now. You are flexing quite a bit.
That's a new thing, so.
Yeah, and I can feel nearly all the way down now, the left one.
Yeah, so and you've certainly got hope.
Yeah, so much hope.
Going out on weekends, hanging with my friends, happy in my oblivion.
Thanks to Annie, Mark and Louisa for sharing their stories about the music in their lives. That's all for today. Visit the All in the Mind website for more details about the program, and if your musical appetite has been stimulated, there's a link there to My Life as a Playlist. It's an interactive website where you can curate a personal soundtrack to your life. It's a partnership between the ABC and the Centre for the History of Emotions. And Jane Davidson, who we heard from earlier in today's show, has been instrumental in that. I'm Lynn Malcolm. Thanks for joining me on All in the Mind. See you next week. But now, on RN, Joe Gelonesi brings you The Philosopher's Zone.
I see the me that